Welcome to Local Exposure, a podcast about music and the greater Cincinnati scene. I'm Jim Nolan. There's a new book out about women in Southern California punk rock, written by Stacy Russo, a teacher and librarian who lives in Santa Ana. We Were Going to Change the World features interviews with women involved in the Southern California punk rock scene in the 1970s and 80s. She interviews not only musicians, but photographers and artists and fans. She looks at the influence punk rock had on the rest of their lives, socially, artistically, and politically. Stacy Russo, welcome to Local Exposure.
Thank you so much for having me.
So this new book features 37 interviews with different types of women, and you interview some noteworthy musicians like Alice Bag and Exene Cervenka from X and Jennifer Finch from L7, Kira from Black Flag. But you also include women who were photographers, DJs, writers, and artists, and others who were just simply fans. When did you start the interview process, and how did you choose who to interview and who to include?
Yeah, those are great ideas, and that really gets to the core of the project. So I grew up in the punk rock scene of the 1980s here in Southern California, and initially how the program or the project came about was I wanted to interview other women like me. I wanted to interview women who maybe are now in their 40s, 50s, 60s, or older, and find out how were they involved with punk rock, why were they involved, you know, what got them interested in it, and was their involvement in the scene, did it end up influencing the rest of their lives in any way? Sure. Because it definitely did that for me. So initially, I was focusing on really capturing as much of a diverse portrait of the scene as I could, and that pretty much carried through the whole project. I wanted to definitely include some of the more famous women because their voices are very important, and they were, of course, amazing contributions to the whole scene, the whole movement. But I wanted to also include women who were involved in a lot of different ways, and that definitely included women whose sole contribution may have just been, you know, going to shows and being fans, or perhaps creating a fanzine, right, a small self-published magazine, or, as you mentioned, taking photographs of the bands and then having those photographs appear in different publications. So I didn't want to just focus on only performers. I wanted to really provide the readers with the whole scene. And I think also with people have different views, maybe, you know, about art and the audience and versus the performer. But I think definitely with punk rock, and I'm sure, you know, with other art movements or periods of music in the past, that the audience is really just as important in many ways as the performers. And there was such a shared energy that came through that.
Sure.
So I wanted to also capture that.
Yeah, you mentioned that in the book about how often the crowd, the other folks, the folks not on stage, make the event as unique as the artists themselves do.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, if we really think about it, I'm also a poet, and, I mean, I could just, you know, be here at home and read my poems to myself and do a private reading. But obviously when it's a reading with an audience and people are responding and listening and witnessing, you know, your art and participating in that way, it just gives everything so much more power. So that's definitely what I was thinking about as I pursued the project.
Now, among the various women that you interview, I do see some parallels in their very different stories. Oftentimes there's a history of either chemical abuse or domestic violence and other kinds of ugliness that might have helped push these individuals to the outside and into this rebellious counterculture. Do you feel that that's accurate?
I think with some of the women's stories, that's definitely there. There are also some accounts in some of the stories of growing up very poor. And obviously, like you mentioned, there are some instances of dysfunctional, you know, family life or broken homes. But that's not the case for all of the women. That's not the case for me, for example, the way I grew up. So that's kind of hard to say, but I have given a lot of thought to the women and what drew them, you know, to punk rock. And for example, one parallel that you don't really maybe see that clearly in the book, but I saw it as somebody who was doing the interviews, because I also got to know a lot of the women pretty well, and some of them are actually my friends now, which I wasn't anticipating starting out the project. Mm-hmm. But over half of the women in the book, for example, didn't have children, and that's a real high percentage that does not mirror the mainstream culture in any way. And a good number of them also never married, but they've had a lot of male partners. So I guess all of the women in some way described themselves or felt like they were somehow a misfit or an outcast for different reasons. There are, of course, a lot of people who grow up in poverty or have domestic violence and maybe would not have been drawn to punk rock. So I don't know if there's really a parallel there, but all the women did feel that there was something about them that didn't really fit in. Although they were already different, being in that scene perhaps gave them more options in life, different things they could do. They had a community. They saw that you didn't have to follow maybe a mainstream or traditional life, that you would be fine pursuing something else. So in some ways, it might have empowered more of that.
I think it's fair to say rock and roll in general has always kind of been a white male-dominated industry. And did uh-huh. you feel that in the creation of this book, that was sort of a help to react against that?
People's experience, you know, with punk rock is also different, I think, depending on maybe the community they lived in. 'Cause in some of the communities, the Latino influence was very significant in punk rock out here. So in some ways it was diverse. But a lot of the representations, though, of rock and roll, like you're getting to, and of punk rock in some other books that have come out, they're obviously more of the male narrative than women in those books. But that happens a lot in our culture, not just in, you know, rock and roll.
Right, right.
So I thought, you know, I want to do something that is just the women's voices. And even though, yes, these are all women, they all have unique stories and all felt that they had a significant impact, or at least being involved in that has impacted their life in a way. I was trying to really represent that women were very active and involved in this scene. As the scene progressed, and this is mentioned in the book, through the later 80s, it definitely became more violent. A lot of the shows I went to, there was a lot of violence there, and sometimes it was perhaps the police that caused it, but it was also audience at times. So that maybe was not as friendly to women, but women were still there, though. They still wanted to be a part of that, and I still went to those shows. But yes, I was, like you're saying, I was trying to present, hey, look, here are all these people who were involved, and let's hear their voices. And I absolutely love all the women. I wasn't anticipating that, you know, how I'd feel, but almost instantly when I met them, because I did most of the interviews in their homes, I instantly loved them. They had a real spark, like they were alive. Even the ones that suffered through drug addictions, you know, and all these things, they looked so good and just so vibrant, you know, and I thought, wow, these are great women.
Now, in reading your book, I can't help but feel that aside from the fact that you grew up in Southern California and I grew up in suburban Northern Kentucky, we do share a lot of commonality. I think we're of a similar age and similar interests. But so I was curious, you don't talk much about yourself in the book, but I would like to know, like, for instance, what was your first punk show?
Wow, the first show, that would possibly be hard for me to remember, but it may have been the Dead Kennedys at the Olympic Auditorium, which was a large venue here in Los Angeles. But I went to a lot of shows at a club called Fenders that was in Long Beach. And then I also would go to shows at the Whiskey, some other clubs in Los Angeles. And then I went to a lot of shows at houses, you know, and backyard parties, roller rinks, all kinds of places. I can definitely remember the first album that I heard. It was the Dead Kennedys' In God We Trust. And I don't know how I got a hold of that, but I remember being by myself in my bedroom. You know, I was maybe 14 or 15, and I listened to that, and it actually kind of terrified me. I was like, what is this? But I was so intrigued by the energy of it that I just kept listening to it. And that was really how it all began, and I just thought, this is really how I feel.
See, I was fortunate in that I was the youngest of five, and I had some pretty cool siblings who would turn me on to different bands and different shows. Here in the greater Cincinnati area, we had a club called the Jockey Club, which was sort of the pinnacle of the punk rock clubs at the time. And there were great shows there, you know, Dead Kennedys, Ramones, Husker Du, what have you. But at the time, I was either too young or, frankly, maybe a little too intimidated to go to those shows. How did you discover new bands? Did you have siblings or just friends, or how'd that work for you?
It was really just friends. We would go to shows every weekend. So whatever was happening at the clubs, we would go out there, and that's really, you know, how I found out about music. And then also, I used to read Maximum Rock and Roll and Flipside, and that was also how I would discover bands. And there would be scene reports in those fanzines, and you could read about scenes in all different cities around, you know, this country and around the world. So one of the most influential bands for me was actually a band from England called Conflict. And these were all things I just found out from other people and reading those fanzines.
See, I think it's interesting that being in Southern California, you probably were introduced to bands that were both big and small. And here in Ohio, we probably didn't get as many bands until they actually, quote unquote, made it. You know, bands like Circle Jerks, Dead Kennedys, Suicidal Tendencies,
yeah,
bands like that. So you probably were introduced to a wider array of different styles and different music and different things like that. But in general, how do you think that the punk scene in California differs from most places all over the U.S.?
Well, I mean, this is a very large area out here, you know, the greater Los Angeles area, and it is a very creative area as well. And this is still in some people's mind, you know, a place where you would go if you are a little different to
right.
begin with. I mean, I still get jokes about, oh, you're from California, from people from, you know, other states. So there's still this idea of it. So I think perhaps there was a lot more freedom maybe in the area just because of where it's located.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the bands, too, like you're mentioning some of these larger bands. So bands like maybe that you might be familiar with, you know, like Bad Religion or like Black Flag, you know, these bands played here all the time, you know. So like Social Distortion, you could see them play almost every week, it seemed.
Mm-hmm.
So I think these bands that might be larger and you wouldn't see them as much in other areas, here it just almost seemed like they were your buddies playing, you know, because they lived around you. And perhaps there were more opportunities here with all the clubs and being such a large area. But I'm certain that just from reading scene reports and seeing, you know, what was going on in other cities, that the scene was vibrant in many places, even if it maybe wasn't as large as here.
You talk about several of the women in the book and how they've, for whatever reasons, chosen to say, not start a family. What about you? How has the background of having a punk influence changed how you view your daily life?
Yeah, so, and that's really why I wanted to do the book. As I had mentioned, I wanted to find out if the punk rock scene influenced the women's lives. And for me, I can trace the core of my political beliefs and actually the way I live my daily life from punk rock. So now that I'm close to 50 years old, there have been many things that have influenced me up to this point, and I don't look punk rock, you know, if you were to see me, and I'm a professor and a librarian at a college. I was awakened politically, you know, through punk rock, issues like human rights and, you know, racism and, you know, women's rights and class issues and animal rights. I stopped eating meat when I was 16, and I haven't returned to eating mm-hmm. meat, so that's most of my life. So, and even, you know, where I shop, how I treat people, how I'm open to people who might be different from me, the aspects of the whole do-it-yourself culture, you know, you don't have to wait for permission to start a band or to write something, you know, create art, just go out and do it. I even feel like as a teacher, that's a part of how I am with my work. I'm thankful for punk rock that it did make me aware of things in the world that are so important to me in terms of how I live my life now. Like a lot of the women in the book, I also have not had children, and I don't even really feel real strongly about that. I just didn't really have an interest in it. It didn't seem that significant to me, I guess. But as a woman in the world, that alone, you know, not having children, I'm questioned about that a lot, sometimes in an uncomfortable way, as if there's something, you know, somehow wrong with me.
Right, like there's an expectation there.
Yeah, and so interviewing all these women and seeing this parallel, all of them except for one, there was absolutely no sadness for them that they didn't have children. They also it just didn't really interest them.
After the break, we'll hear more from Stacy Russo. We'll talk about Kim Gordon, Mike Watt, and the role of women in the creation of her book, We Were Going to Change the World.
We're bringing the cosmos to you on Looking Up, our new podcast with astronomer Dean Regas and co-host Anna Heeman. Fascinating guests, questions from kids, and we'll delve into the crazy letters received at the Cincinnati Observatory. Subscribe to Looking Up on Apple Podcasts or WVXU.org.
Now back to the show. There was a recent interview with Kim Gordon after the release of her book, Girl in a Band, and the interviewer still chose to focus on things like what clothes she wore on stage or the other non-musical aspects of her career, like how did she balance being a girl in a band and a mother. Do you feel that that sort of mentality is still pervasive in our culture, that women need to be viewed as the exception to the rule?
Yeah. You know, what she's commenting on reminds me of, you know, the author Rebecca Solnit. She's had that experience where she's a very successful writer, but she's often questioned about her personal life during interviews, not her work. You know, she's asked about the children question or a husband question and this thing you're mentioning about clothing, you know, and all that. It is unfortunate because I don't think that a lot of men would get those same questions. And in the book, you may have noticed that there aren't photographs for all the women. And although it would have been nice to include photographs, I told all the women up front, it's optional. You know, you don't have to include a photo if you don't want to. And any photo that appears will only be one that you approve of. Some of the women didn't want to have a photo of themselves in there. They just wanted the story to appear. The publisher was great with all of these demands that I had and these things, because he understood where I was coming from, that it is often, well, what do you look like?
Why did you choose to invite Mike Watt to write an introduction to a book about women.
That was a later part of the project, and I talked with the publisher, and he wanted to know about including a foreword. And I said, sure, that would be a nice contribution. And we talked about a lot of different people to approach. It wasn't that important to me, the gender of that person, as long as they would be considered a male ally for women. And Mike is the one who really came through with what I thought was a beautiful contribution. He's really telling a story about how women have influenced him as a musician, you know, as an artist. And he's not explaining things necessarily, you know.
Right.
The women are, but he's even mentions being asked to be on a panel once, and they're about punk rock, and there weren't any women on the panel, so he refused to be on it. I think it's an interesting kind of contrast in a way that the male contribution, you know, in the book is about, you know, 1% of the book, if that. But it's not as if he's, as I said, explaining women's role.
Yeah.
He's talking about how women have influenced him as a performer. See, I had this thing happen recently where two women kind of attacked me for including a man, and it really hurt. They actually didn't even want to support the book, and I'm like, what? Like, there's 37 women's stories in here, you know? And I thought, we need to look at who the man is that provided the contribution, and because I think a man can definitely be a feminist, or at least support feminists, you know. And so your question was interesting because that just happened. And besides all the women in the book, I know that the book was designed by a woman, the editor and the proofreader is a woman, the distributor is a woman, and a man published the book, but all these women are involved.
Well, it's really a wonderful book. It's very eye-opening to get such a wide range of stories about this unique time, this unique place, and this unique collection of individuals. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for your interest and support of the book.
I've been speaking with Stacey Russo about her book, We Were Going to Change the World, Interviews with Women from the 1970s and 1980s Southern California Punk Rock Scene. You can find links to more information about the book on our website at wvxu.org/LX. Check out some of our past shows. You can find Lee's recent interview with Garland Jeffries or Loudon Wainwright III. Archives of our programs can be found at wvxu.org/LX. You can subscribe to this show and many other great podcasts at wvxu.org/podcastcentral. The music you're listening to right now is the song Mirror by Jasper the Colossal from their album Liar. You can find out more at jasperthecolossal.bandcamp.com. Local Exposure is a production of Cincinnati Public Radio. It is produced by Lee Hay and myself, Jim Nolan. Until next time.